We're told that in German there is a most interesting aphorism often quoted by musicians. Das Wie bestimmt das Was und das Was bestimmt das Wie. Literally translated, how determines what and what determines how. Within a musical context, the technique and skill of a performer constitute the how. The what is the final artistic product presented to the audience. The obvious implication is that there is a significant symbiotic relationship between the two. But is this idea just a musical variation on the chicken and egg conundrum? Furthermore, is there a best methodology or pedagogical approach that somehow unites the two? It can be said, in the hands of a great artist, technique is somewhat analogous to a chest full of quality tools. Tools are chosen carefully by a craftsperson as needed to build something beautiful from carefully drawn up plans. A fine artisan will not choose a chisel to turn a screw, nor use a pocket knife to split firewood. An inefficient or inadequately trained mechanism cannot produce the same results as a finely tuned one any more than a passenger sedan will ever win a race against a Ferrari. If there is a physical struggle in a musician's performance, the sound and artistic impression will reflect that fact in very obvious ways. But since each human being has highly individual physical attributes, each musician has to discover the best approach to the music he or she plays. This knowledge is gained through practice, experimentation, coaching, and most important, critical listening. To be sure, even the heart's most sincere desire to be an artist can never be a substitute for excellent training, hard work, and technical prowess acquired over time. Every musician must pay his or her dues to develop a reliable foundation for a convincing musical interpretation. Slow, careful practice and consistent work on scales, arpeggios, and essential exercises is a requirement, not an option. Every thoughtful musician realizes that technique is clearly a means to an end, and that the end cannot be reached without the technical means to do so. But at the highest levels of musicianship, an artist's impulse must be derived from clear musical goals and vivid musical imagery. And this will go far toward enabling the performer to discover the best technical means to express his or her inmost feelings for each musical circumstance. Neither technical ability nor artistic intent can stand alone, but when the two join hands, the spiritual magically embraces the physical. Together, they create something infinitely more rewarding than either skill or feeling can possibly achieve, and technique assumes its rightful place as the essential link between talent and artistry. Words of Wayne Johnson, professor of music at Seattle Pacific University, from his essay, When Artistry Embraces Technique, in American Music Teacher, Spring 2008. We're hearing pieces intended for piano students by Muzio Clementi as exercises for building technique from his well-known collection Gradus ad Parnassum, Steps to Parnassus. The collection is sometimes satirized, most notably by composer Claude Debussy, who well knew piano students who were often dismayed by having to practice over and over dreary, uninteresting exercises, paying half-hearted attention to the problems they present, but realizing, of course, that the pathway towards lofty achievements, in this case Parnassus, is actually the result of the outwardly uneventful struggles and successes in building technique. And those words are by Edward Burlingame Hill in Etude. As it happens, Hill uses the word pathway, contending that the serious commitment to practice is a pathway to creating one's art. And we're about to learn about an approach to developing one's art that has in its very name way or path or road. Ani from the Swahili. The internationally known Ani Art Academies, established in 1998 as the Waichulis Studio here in northeastern Pennsylvania by artist Anthony Waichulis, In 2010, Wychulis was approached by Tim Reynolds, co-founder of a Wall Street trading firm, passionate artist, and founder of the Tim Reynolds Foundation, to establish a training program to give aspiring artists around the world artistic direction. Inspired by Reynolds' vision, the Wychulis Studio merged with the Ani Art Academy's project to create the new entity, the Ani Art Academy Wychulis, the first of six Academy sites. The Ani Art Academy's project has expanded within the United States and to Asia and the Caribbean. Every 2 years, instructors, alumni, and apprentices of the Ani Art Academies take part in an exhibition titled Capturing Realism at Misericordia University in Dallas, Pennsylvania, just outside Wilkes-Barre. The show opens Saturday, July 8th, featuring works by 50 artists and running through August 26th at the Pauli Friedman Gallery on the campus. Anthony Wychulis, founder of the original Wychulis Studio, and Anya Dribas, general administrator, paid a visit to the WVIA studios to talk with us about the Ani Art Academy's project in anticipation of the biennial exhibition.
The Ani Art Academy's curriculum is a very systematic program of deliberate practice. And what we do is we use techniques that people may associate with learning a language or especially learning a musical instrument. And we do an enormous amount of repetition, but the repetition and the exercises that the artists engage in, and if we are to use that music analogy, which seems really well suited for this particular venue of sharing this information, I think that a lot of our exercises could be understood as scales and arpeggios and cadences that students will repeat over and over and over again to build a lot of automaticity, to build a lot of procedural fluency. And we try to do all of that without teaching a particular aesthetic, which allows students to hopefully realize more that this very, very particular skill set could be adapted to a very, very wide range of art.
Now, how did you come to those insights?
Well, I did have some wonderful art teachers that I eclectically borrowed from quite a bit, quite heavily. But, I'm very, very grateful to my parents because when we were growing up, they really made sure that myself, my brother, and my sister had a very well-rounded education, which did include art and music. And I was able to see that in some of the art programs, looking at it in a more comprehensive manner, that some of the fundamentals that would be taught from one art program to the next seemed to vary a little bit in that some would be, the fundamentals themselves would be more or less governed by the aesthetic preferences of the instructor, whereas what we noticed in music was regardless of the style or the instrument, music theory stayed the same. It was a very, very well-rooted system of conventional fundamentals that were able to be translated from one particular instrument to another genre to, you know, so forth and so on. And what I wanted to do was take all of this wonderful information that I was exposed to and hunt down, obviously, more artistic information beyond that, art education information beyond that. And then what I wanted to do was distill it down to that connective tissue that would be emulative of what I was referring to with the music conventional fundamentals.
How long a process was that exploratory phase?
Well, I believe years. It was not an overnight development, as you suspect. It was a very, very long evolution, which I would say developed in parallel with my own personal artistic goals. And, you know, I never really set out to be an art teacher, but what I found was, you know, selfishly, I was hunting through a lot of this for myself so I could learn it better, so I could become more adaptable, you know, by which I would have greater creative freedom. But what had started to happen, even back when I was in school, is people would ask me, how are you doing this? How are you doing that? And I ended up inviting a few artists here, a few artists there to come back to my studio after school to further demonstrate how I was doing this or how I was doing that. And what eventually happened is when I finished up school, which at the time I was going to school in Baltimore, when I came back here to Pennsylvania, which is really the flashpoint for all of this, I thought, well, I might as well open up a small studio here and see who has interest. And this is all the way back in 1998, and my program is still, I still consider my curriculum to be incredibly organic, and it still grows to this day based upon what I'm learning from the young aspiring creatives that I get to work with. But I would say from the mid-90s till now, you know, that would be the span of its evolution, and it continues to this day.
What happened here that allowed the program to go around the globe?
Well, you know, honestly, there's no way to really overemphasize the fact that it was the support that we had here from friends and family and fans and, you know, everyone that saw what we were doing when we were this very, very small studio in Nanticoke, Pennsylvania in 1997, 1998 when we got started. And, you know, a lot of people ask me where I'm from, and they say, you know, oh, well, when they learn, well, you're from this very small rural corner of northeastern Pennsylvania, this region that used to be focused a lot on coal mining and whatnot. A lot of people were surprised that I didn't come from some more metropolitan region with some type of background where I would have had more access to these cultural resources. I mean, now with the advent of the internet and so forth and so on, you know, location seems to have less to do with that. But I tell people, actually, if it wasn't for the people here in this area, that rather than naysay what I was doing when they learned, well, this young man wants to be an artist and wants to open up an art studio in this small town here, and it was an enormous amount of support, and people that you may not have assumed would come out in favor of what we were doing, or just even offer words of encouragement for what we were doing. And people seem to go out of their way to do that. And really, while there is a cascade of events that led from this small town studio to this global organization, really, the catalyst were the people in this area.
Where is the Academy now, then?
We have our original flagship, which is here in Bear Creek Township, and the Ani Art Academy's Wachula's. That is the current version of the Wachula Studio. What started as that studio back in 1997, 1998, when Tim Reynolds approached us, who is the founder of Ani Art Academy's, when he approached us to ask us to use our curriculum and asked us if we would help him launch this organization with very large goals. We decided that the best course of action at that time was to allow the Wachula Studio to grow into the very first Ani Art Academies. But even though the organization was to be very, very large, we still wanted to keep the Ani Art Academies Wachula's very small so that it was emulative of that first Wachula Studio. So we keep a campus that is capable of handling about 12 students right now, which is the ideal instructor to student ratio for me personally. But the other schools are much larger, and most of the other schools do have two teachers to break it up. But we have the Ani Art Academies America, which is in Red Bank, New Jersey, which has been launched to cater specifically to veterans. And then we have the Ani Art Academies Anguilla and the Ani Art Academies Dominicana, both which are in the Caribbean. And last year, we launched the Ani Art Academies Thailand, which is what Anya helped to oversee. And I believe in the next 12 to 16 months, we should see the launch of Ani Art Academy Sri Lanka. All of the events that we could be very thankful for along the way, I still want to really stress, and this will, you know, come back when I want to talk about Capturing Realism, the show that we're going to have here. None of that would have happened without the original encouragement from the people of this area.
Yes. Ani, people might think you're saying Annie.
The word Ani, A-N-I, is a shortened form of a Swahili word, Anjani, which means the path or the way. And I can't take credit for coming up with a name. This is all Tim Reynolds, because he gets on me every time I try to steal his thunder with all of his great quotes and his brilliance. So I just want that on the record.
Okay, Anya, your assignment is start from scratch in a country you probably don't know.
I haven't been there before, yes.
What happened? How did you do this?
We had a really great support group from people in Thailand there. And they helped me and head instructor of Ani Art Academies Thailand, Rodney Davis, So the people are incredible. The culture, the Thai people, they will beg over backwards to help you with anything. And most of them, they do speak English, so that it was easier to communicate. Extremely great people. And it was a little bit challenging finding the materials and to make sure that they're up to par that what we use in U.S. The heat.
The heat.
But it was great. It was a great experience.
The way we started, Anthony, was your explaining that this is a system of honing skills and techniques that can be applied to any number of styles.
Yes.
So the people who are working at the academy in Thailand could, if they wanted, do things that are in a Western style of...
They could, and that was kind of the goal, and I think that was one of the factors that really attracted Tim Reynolds to our program was the fact that it was, again, a deliberate practice without the inclusion of aesthetic. And what that means is that there are many programs of training that will build skills, but will simultaneously impart a sense of appreciation or an emphasis on a certain type of art or a certain region's cultural aesthetic. And what one of the things we didn't want to do was go to these different areas and impose any type of aesthetic on anyone else. Rather, we wanted the exact opposite of that. What we wanted to do was develop a lot of skills of procedural fluency and superior manual dexterity and a lot of aspects of visual perceptual processing that would allow for many of these artists in other countries who have amazingly beautiful cultures to just, let's just say, to speak louder.
How many students did you start with?
Well, in Thailand, I believe right now we have up to 15 students, and most of them are Thai nationals, local people. We do have a few foreigners who do live in Thailand, and we started with like one or two and doing promotions, going to different conferences, to colleges and high schools, just getting people, just spreading the word, and we have a lot of interest at the school.
And you have a variety of results then, different styles.
Well, I would say, and this is a criticism that comes up from time to time, and I think it's very valid, it's very fair. When people look at the work coming out of the schools, and a lot of people will look at it and they'll say, well, this all looks, for lack of a better term, I'm going to use a more colloquial use of this term, it'll look photorealist or hyperrealist. And they will think, well, this looks just like a photo. And again, it's a very fair comparison because the type of imagery that we seem to be most exposed to in our current daily lives is photography. You know, you anyone's camera right now is a very, very high power photography tool. So, you know, we understand that. Now, a lot of people will look at our training system and look at the early creative works of these students, and they'll say, well, a lot of these works look the same. They look all very photorealistic, for lack of a better word. But I tell people, this is the type of convention that we're teaching. We begin just like a child would learn a language, through mimesis, through copying, through repetitious reproduction. And I think one of the examples that I used to use when some people say, well, some of the criticisms where, well, aren't you getting in the way of a particular aspect of creativity in having everyone conform to these conventions? And I explain it this way. I say to people, imagine your child comes home from school, you know, their first day of school, and you're very excited, and you know, you go up to the child and you say, did you learn your alphabet today? And the child responds, well, no. We're not going to learn the alphabet that exists. Our teacher said, in the interest of creativity, we're going to make up our own. And let's just say the parent followed up with the question, well, what about numbers? Did you learn about numbers today? No. The teacher said, we don't have to learn the standard convention of numbers. We get to make up our own in the interest of creativity. Now, let me ask you this. In the interest of creativity, by sidestepping the convention that will allow interaction with society in general, have you empowered that child creatively, or have you diminished that child's creative freedom? And that's what I think people need to understand. A lot of the early creative work that you see looks very similar because it's not just performance, it's practice. And those things are almost inextricably woven early on, and this leads to a sort of similarity. If you were to step back, though, and look at the tree of everyone that has attended either the White Chula Studio or now one of the Ani Art Academies and has graduated, you'll see that where they all started gravitating to a very similar trunk to learn these conventions, they've all branched out in very different directions.
So every couple of years then, Misericordia invites you and your circle.
Absolutely. And again, no big surprise. It's people back here that allow us to do something great. And, you know, when we were back in the very first White Chula Studio with some very special people that really helped me launch that very first studio. I hope I'm not going to embarrass anybody, but I'd like to mention some names. We have Susan Obaza, Philip Durkin, John Texera, Nicholas Kratz, we had Adam Vinson, and a lot of these people in the area that ended up going on to have extremely creative careers in many different aspects, using their skills in many, many different ways to pursue their careers. But when we were this first small group, a woman by the name of Donna Posadko had allowed us to, and she's now the head director of the Pauli Friedman Art Gallery at Misericordia. At the time, the Pauli Friedman Gallery did not exist. It was the McDonald Art Gallery at Misericordia. And she had allowed us to have some of our first shows from the White Chula Studio there. And as these shows became bigger and bigger and more successful, and some of the artists of that initial group, which as years went on, it just began to grow and grow and grow, and new generations of students would come in. What we found was that a lot of the artwork that, as these artists individually were getting more and more popular, a lot of that artwork was getting pulled out across the country. They were getting pulled towards the West Coast, across the United States, into all these galleries that peppered the landscape between this coast and that. And which we were very, very happy for. But one of the things that even some of the artists that were very, very integral in the early years of the White Chula Studio decided, wouldn't it be great that no matter what we go on to do or where we are in so many years, that we come back to not only share what we're doing, that's a given, to share what we're doing, but again, to celebrate the people in this area that have allowed us to do what we do and share a lot of our efforts with them. So every 2 years, we're able to, through Misericordia, come back here to this area and pull in as many pieces of artwork as we can from now artists that would number in the hundreds, to pull from them what artworks we can to have a big art celebration with the wonderful people here in Northeastern Pennsylvania.
And does that include from out of the country?
Yeah, absolutely. We could see it jumping out now from Pennsylvania to the United States, and then out from the United States to these other countries. But now the celebration goes so far as to pull from all of these countries back again to honor the area and the people that constitute this area. We have so much to be thankful for.
Now, do you have a role to play in hanging the show, or what do you
do? Yes, I have a big role. After I came back here, I took on a role of a general administrator for the academy. So I'm running the show with Anthony, running the captional realism.
She's being modest. She's running the show.
Yes, this year is our biggest show. We have over 80 works, and it's also very exciting because this year we have our first works from Thailand. Also very exciting because we have works from first graduates from Ani Art Academy Dominicana. And both instructors that teach in the Dominican Republic, they are both from here. They are local. Edward Dillon from Nanticoke and Deborah Lloyd from Kingston. So they're both local, and now they have over 40 students between the two of them.
They're quite popular now.
They're very popular. Yeah. That's why the second school was built there, because it was quite popular.
It was overwhelming interest, yeah.
So this year's show is the biggest one.
Let's go out another level, and you used the musical analogy. You've got the skills, you've trained very hard, you're going to go out on stage and you're going to perform. What is the importance of this creative expression in our lives, especially now when we're on all our devices and so forth? Why are the arts so important?
Oh, I mean, that's a question we could probably spend hours and hours and hours digging into. But I would like to recommend a book that I think is, I just finished it, by Augustine Fuentes, called The Creative Spark: How Imagination Made Humans Exceptional. How creativity is an essential aspect of the human condition. I would tell people, you know, that is a stellar book, a lot of evolutionary biology, evolutionary psychology. I think that when some people hear that you're going to go into a creative career, they think, oh no, how are you going to make a living at doing this? But I think people that are thinking about a creative life, they're not thinking about necessarily a creative living at that point. They're thinking about just the aspect of life that they really, really want to engage in. And again, I'd like to, you know, just state that there's still a tremendous career that's both intellectually, financially rewarding, of course. But I think that what people need to realize is that art in itself is a 40,000-year-old plus record of the human condition. And it's through this creative record that allows us to learn about where we come from and who we are. It allows us to productively look introspectively and allows us to make wild speculations about where we'll go from here.
Now, your personal journey, will you have work represented in the show?
That's a really good question. But usually when the whole Capturing Realism exhibitions got started, I really didn't want a show. I didn't want to exhibit in the show because I didn't want it to be a venue for me, but I wanted it to be a venue for the students. They put the show together, they populate the show, and it's theirs. It's their thing. But in recent years, people started to really push me to give the show some context by showing what some of the instructors do. So yes, I have, among all of the wide salvo of incredible works that will be populating these walls, I have a tiny little piece that I'll be sneaking in the show. So
I'll hang it in a corner.
Behind a plant, maybe. Yeah. Yes, one small work I will be having in the show this year.
And is it one that is more recent?
Yes, it is. It's a more recent work. I've been extraordinarily fortunate in my career that just about everything I've ever painted, any time I've ever put a brush to canvas, the work had gone to a gallery and sold right away. And, you know, so I'm very fortunate that a lot of the work is not available to me anymore. And, you know, it's funny. When we have people that come and visit the school and they come into the Ani Art Academy by Chulas and they look around and they almost have this puzzled look on their face. And I know why it is. They're looking around at the walls and they're thinking, there's no artwork here. And they're puzzled by that. And again, I recognize the look, so I say, you're looking at the walls. And they're like, yeah, well, you know, I imagine there'd be artwork all over. And I tell people, well, I think it's a very good sign when you walk into a school where you're thinking about learning how to make a living as a painter or an artist, I should say. I think it's a very good sign when you come in and they have no work available. Yeah, like a lot of their work isn't sitting around. It's either in galleries, museums, private collections, whatnot. So it's another aspect that I'm very, very grateful.
Have posters of the shows and exhibits that we participated in and that the artwork sold.
But the posters are almost like saying, don't you wish you could have been at this show to see work that's not here?
It's not.
Artist Anthony Wychulis, founder of the original Wychulis Studio, and Anya Dribas, General Administrator for the Academy, speaking with us in anticipation of the biennial exhibition Capturing Realism 2017, featuring the work of 50 artists who are instructors, alumni, and or apprentices of the Ani Art Academies. And that's at the Pauli Friedman Gallery at Misericordia University in Dallas, just outside Wilkes-Barre. The exhibit will open with a Meet the Artists reception on Saturday, July 8th from 5 to 7 p.m. The public is invited to attend. There is no admission charge. The Pauli Friedman Art Gallery at Misericordia University hosting Capturing Realism 2017, July 8th through August 26th, with a Meet the Artists reception on Saturday, July 8th from 5 to 7 p.m. For more information on the web, misericordia.edu/art, misericordia.edu/art, and to learn more about the Wychulis Studio, we'll spell Wychulis for you, and that's Waichulis, Wychulis, and you can find them on their website, aniartacademies.org, aniartacademies.org. Or misericordia.edu/art, Capturing Realism 2017, July 8th through August 26th, you're invited to a Meet the Artist reception, Saturday, July 8th from 5 to 7 p.m. at the Pauli Friedman Art Gallery on the campus of Misericordia University in Dallas, just outside Wilkes-Barre, misericordia.edu/art.